Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome. Thanks a lot for coming. Kind of stinks when we have to do this all by ourselves, you know what I mean? My name is Dave Platt. I am the head honcho of Rolling Thunder Computing. I'm the only honcho of Rolling Thunder Computing, and with me is my colleague, Manu Cohen-Yashar from Tel Aviv.
I come from Sela, Tel Aviv in Israel, and I'm a senior consultant about cloud computing, about distributed systems, so on, application security.
Good to have everybody here, and today we're going to be talking about developing cloud applications with the Windows Azure platform. As you probably heard, this thing is a new series of teaching that Microsoft is doing called a Jumpstart, and the idea is to kind of take developers who are thinking about using cloud or wondering if it's a good idea or starting to do pilots and sort of give you what you need to get your first thing going and spinning and actually get into production. I saw that a number of you are already have your first one spinning, and you're more than welcome to come here, and I hope you'll get some new ideas on different ways things might be done. And for the rest of you guys, the main goal is to sort of get you up to where you can or will start planning and executing your first pilot program in Azure. And so just a little bit of background to let you know where we're coming from, where we're trying to get to here. I am I'm a developer. I'm an author. I teach .NET at Harvard University Extension School. Written a bunch of books. You've probably seen these. This was Com Plus. It was my first MS Press book here. We're in the MS Press building right now. All right. And I don't want to say something about something else where you're coming from.
Well, I do cloud computing. I love Azure. I love cloud computing. I love distributed systems. And I really am excited about helping customers to leverage cloud computing and to do it correctly and wisely. So let's get started.
Correctly and wisely, that's a good idea. I'll be the incorrect and unwise guy. Great, fine. All right, so here's what we're going to have. There's going to be 12 hours of content on each of 3 days. Today we're going to be speaking about, I'm going to be giving you an overview, an intro to the compute service, and then Manu is going to talk 2 hours on the Azure lifecycle. Tomorrow I'm going to be talking about storage, and then Manu will be giving you an intro to the SQL side of Azure, and Manu is also going to be talking about diagnostics. On day three, Manu is going to talk about security. I'm going to talk about scalability, caching, and elasticity. That last point that you see there, the hands-on lab walkthrough, we're actually not doing that one. What we're doing instead is we're going to be, we'd like you to send us your questions, the things that are we've picked out what we think are the most important burning issues for you. But that last hour, the last day is your time. What we would like is for you to send us questions in the next today and tomorrow so that we can prepare answers. What are the things that are most bugging you? Now, as we're speaking, of course, the producer here, the introduction, told you how to ask us questions online, and whichever of us is not speaking is going to be monitoring the questions and posing them to the speaker as they come. If you have a question that you'd like, some other topic that we haven't spoken about, please, anytime you feel like it, tell us what you think that would be, and that's what we're going to be putting in that last hour stuff for you. Okay. And again, the idea is to help you get up and execute a Windows Azure pilot product.
Yeah, and you can watch those sessions whenever you want, because they will be recorded. So you're more than welcome to download the sessions and tell your friends to download them as well.
And your enemies. All right, let's go. So tell me, here's what we won't be covering. Yeah, it's not a course on programming Visual Studio. You need to know that. It is a programming course on Azure. So, you know, when I talk about garbage collection and you think I mean your municipal refuse truck, that's kind of not where we are. And in general, we're expecting guys that are experienced developers and architects writing applications already. We're going to teach you what's new about this Azure thing, what's new about the cloud, the new problems we encounter, the new kinds of techniques you're going to need to get around those problems, and stuff like that. So it's not an intro to programming course, but it is very much an intro to Azure and intro to the cloud. So tell me, Manu, in your business, what kinds of things are people asking you for these days?
You know, my customers are really frustrated.
Oh, yeah?
And I'll tell you why.
Tell me why.
They come and tell me that their customers. Their customers are, they want more.
They want more?
Customers want more? Customers want
those
more.
Those ungrateful wretches.
Yeah.
Why don't they just take what we give them and shut the heck up?
They say that they want elasticity.
They
want reliability.
Really? Nah, poo.
They want scalability.
No.
They want availability.
Yeah.
And okay, they want all these things, but they're willing to pay less.
I was going to say, I can give him all that. I'm going to charge him through the nose. And for a consultant like me, that's great.
Okay, but you know, my customers, they ship their software to their customers, and their customers are willing to pay less. And when they come to those customers and tell them, okay, we can give you all those features, no problem, but we'll charge you for that. They say, hey, that's a different world today. In the world of computing, you get more and you pay less. With every PC that you'll buy, a laptop that you'll buy, we're used to getting more year after year, but paying less.
I know what you mean. The price just fell on solid-state hard drives too enough when I replaced my laptop with one of them. So I know the kind of bind you're talking about.
You know, they come and ask me, what can we do? We have to supply all this stuff, and this stuff costs, but our customer will pay us less.
Well, work harder, that's what.
So what can we do?
Well, that's kind of what we're thinking about with Azure. All right, so let's go talk about what this thing is and what where it comes from. Now, you know, whenever I've been using this introduction to Microsoft technologies for the last 20 years, and it keeps on working because they always have the same approach. They roll out the technology and they say, hooray, fabulous, look at all this wonderful technology. Whatever it is, man, it's Windows, it was COM, it was .NET, it's web forms. Whatever it is, they come out leaping and turning cartwheels about the technology and say, look at this wonderful technology. And they never get around to answering the key question. And then when then all of you application programmers, you look at this and you see Microsoft turning cartwheels, and there's only one question you can possibly, there's only one answer you can possibly give, right? Which is, oh yeah, what's in it for me? Right? And the short answer is this, cash, moolah, do-re-mi, getting it out of your client's pocket and into yours where it belongs. Is that not the definition of a client? Somebody who's got your money in their pocket? Yeah. All right. So what we're going to be talking about in this session is not so much the technology in and of itself. Goodness knows you've seen that plenty of times. We're going to be talking about the real computing problems that you're trying to solve, what constitutes a good solution, and what you should point this thing at, what you probably shouldn't point this thing at. And we're going to talk about how you actually get it done. So I'm looking forward to this. All right, so I'm going to start with a little theoretical introduction. You know, here, by the way, if you're going to follow along, there are downloads, which I'll show you. You're going to want, pretty soon, you're going to want access to the Azure platform. And you could certainly go sign up with your own credit card if you wanted to. I sort of did that. It was just save some trouble. But there is a free Windows Azure Platform 30-day pass. There's the link on your screen when you download this. There's the promo code MSL001. MSDN subscribers, there's a link where they can get an Azure pass. There's from CP Allison Partners. There's some other offers on your screen. Pick one of them. You'll probably want that. And while this course is running, the content will be, there it is, borntolearn.msn and mslearn.net. That's where you'll find the PDFs with these slides on them. That's where you'll find our sample code and so on. And a lot of this stuff originally derived from the Windows Azure Platform training course, which you will find at that link on the web. But, you know, if we were just regurgitating the training course, what the heck good would that be? You know, you can always get some art major to read the slides. We are here to try and tell you the stuff that we learned, you know, kind of the hard way, and tell you where that training course makes sense, where it does not exactly make sense, the kinds of things to think about that it doesn't really deal with, and all that kind of good stuff. So, all right, without further ado, let's go get cracking on this wonderful overview that I'll be giving you. So, what is the cloud? Okay, we all know what the darn cloud is. Let's just get the heck on with this silly nonsense, right? You've got, think about it, you've got some product, and you've got to put it out there, and people are going to come use it, and what happens, you sort of think how, you know, where, how much you would likely to have. You've got some rosy scenarios, not-so-rosy scenarios, some completely high-on-drugs kinds of scenarios, and you try and predict what the demand is going to be, and invariably, sometimes you get it right, other times you get it wrong. And, you know, you think that we'll start out with so many servers and then we'll add so many more servers and stuff like that. The actual load varies. The guys that come and use your server really haven't read your predictions. and aren't paying a whole lot of attention to what you think you're going to see, and wouldn't give a damn if they have. And so your actual load is going to vary a lot based on your projections and based on the amount that you have. And this can hurt you in several ways. Here, if you've bought too much power, you rented too many servers, you got them cluttering up your closet, you're paying power bills to heat up the room, and then you're paying more power bills to cool the room off. So your CFO gets kind of, you're wasting capacity, you're wasting money, often at a very critical time in your company's growth where you need that money for other things such as marketing or development. Now the demand is too high, it's over the supply, and what happens then? You get customers to come in, very expensive customers, you've paid a lot for their eyeballs, and they come to you or they say, yeah, I want it, hallelujah, and there they are, and dang, they can't get it. They get the server too busy messages, or they start typing it in and do some work and click the OK button, and then they get the server too busy message after they spent an hour typing it in, and then they are extremely angry at you. You better hope you haven't sold any to the Postal Service. That's not really where you want to be either. And then right there they get annoyed, then the demand falls off. So that's the kind of thing that you see, all right? What you'd really rather do is you would very much like it if your capacity, the capacity that you're paying for, could track the demand so that if you had a higher demand, you could spin up more supply. If the demand went down, you could shorten some of your supply and not be paying for them. That's what you kind of like, all right? And that is kind of what it's the first problem that Azure was sort of designed to solve. So here you don't need as much, you're not spending as much. When the demand goes up, your supply goes up. When it goes down, your supply goes down. You know, life is good. This is the kind of thing that you work. All right. It's not a bad idea, and it's a big change from what we've traditionally done. Traditionally, companies hosted their own IT. I mean, if you had a very small company like I do, okay, I rent space on a server. But once you have 10 or so servers, you host your own. And it's kind of tricky because, you got to have a space for them, you got to have electricity, you got to have cooling, you got to have somebody who knows what they're doing with a load balancer, you got to have somebody who knows what they're doing with platform security. It's a non-trivial problem. And you don't have economies of scale. I mean, you don't get much discount for buying 10 servers. If you have a security guy, he's kind of expensive. He doesn't have a whole lot to worry about with 10 servers. He could worry about 100 servers for the same amount of money. So what you see is it's kind of what happens with electrification in the early part of the 20th century. Manufacturers were first starting to use electric machines, electric tools, and they had their own generators. Everybody had their own generators. You can see starting here, there's the percentage of electricity generated. This declining red line is the private supply. This rising yellow line is the utility supply. And there in the early part of the 19th century, what would happen is utilities would come into being. And they'd say, hey, we'll build a big plant because it doesn't cost twice as much to build twice as big a boiler. You know, we can build 100 times the size boiler for about 3 times the money. Okay, we'll get economies of scale. We can afford to hire boiler engineers, which you really can't, because they've got a big boiler to watch over. We've got a lot of units to spread the cost over. And we can know generating electric power is starting to get complicated. There's starting to be a lot of regulations. The boiler blows up. You've got to have guys that know how to keep the boiler from blowing up. Things like this. We can gain these economies of scale, and you guys can be out of the power generation business. You can make shoes, or you can iron clothes, or whatever it is, and you can be out of the electric power business and concentrate on your core competency. And that is what happens to, that's what happened in to electrification about 100 years ago. And my guess is that that is what is just now starting to happen with computation. And if you think about it, there's one specific piece that they have in common that makes this a very, very good analogy, and that is both the kilowatt of electricity and the kiloflop of computation, if you will. They are both highly perishable commodities. You really can't store a computation. You can't do it now and use it when you want it. And it's very hard to store electricity, any sort of macroscopic amount of electricity. It's hard to store and then reuse. So, you know, they are both highly, highly perishable commodities. All right? So, anyway, that's what we're thinking about now with computation. Hey, guess what? It's time to go make this move to a utility-based model, just like we did with electrification 100 years ago. That's kind of the thought that we're having. Got anything you'd like to add to that, Manu?
You know, I can have the same infrastructure at home. I can have my private cloud.
You can have your private cloud, okay.
So, let's say I do have a data center. I'm a big vendor. I do have a data center, but still, I need my capacity to be agile. I need my capacity to grow up and down. I need to be I need elasticity. So still, I can use the same ideas at home.
So you're saying that? Do I understand correctly that you're saying that? Golly gee whiz, this is really good to get you out of the data center business, but it's also good. If you are in the data center business and you have 1,000 PCs or something, it's good for managing those 1,000 PCs.
Exactly. I'm saying that both scenarios are valid here. Mm. The idea that you just mentioned is valid for large companies as well as for small ones.
All right. Okay. Good thought. Thank you. All right. So let's let us now go talk about some basic terms. And one of the terms makes sense to me. The other two are highly confusing and are going to stay that way. There is, if you think about infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service. Okay, those are the three terms that you're going to hear thrown around like buzzwords, kind of frustrating. And this is what they mean, okay? With packaged software, right, you have to manage everything. I mean, you go and you buy Word or whatever. You've got to manage the networking, the storage, the servers. If you're going to have virtual machines, you got to manage those. You got to manage the operating system, the middleware. You wonder how the hell anybody ever gets any work done. You know what I mean? The runtime, the data, the applications. If you go now have infrastructure as a service, well, now here, the vendor here will manage the networking, the storage, the servers, and the virtualization. And the client, you, we'll manage the operating system, middleware if you have any, the runtime, the data, the applications, etc. Platform as a service, here, the vendor will manage everything all the way up to the runtime, and you just manage the data and the applications. Now, I find the difference between these two terms confusing. It is not immediately apparent to me from the difference in meaning between infrastructure and platform that the one actually means this and the other one means that. So if you see these terms thrown around rather loosely, and one person thinks they mean A and the other person thinks they mean the exact opposite, don't be too terribly surprised. The sort of names of these lend themselves to that ambiguity, which I find kind of frustrating. But on the other hand, that is how independent consultants like ourselves make our living, right? We live in mortal terror of the day that there is no mess-ups here to disambiguate. So we'll be living in a trailer park.
I'll tell you how I think of it.
How do you think of it? Please tell us.
I look at the unit of what we're talking about.
Yes.
When you have software as a service.
Okay, well, that is actually... Okay,
we didn't get that.
The next term, let me point out, this term to me makes a lot of sense. Software as a service. Well, that's where everything is managed from the bottom to the top. Hotmail is a software as a service, for example. The online application Salesforce.com was one of the earliest software as a service where you didn't need to install anything on your PC. It was just all done through the browser. That's software as a service. To me, that one makes a certain amount of sense.
Okay,
the two in the middle I have more trouble with.
So let's begin with infrastructure as a service.
Okay.
The unit we're talking about is a computer.
Yeah, okay.
What I'm gaining is a computer. That's my own server. You give it to me,
okay,
the vendor. That I can do an MSTSC to it. I do a remote desktop to it.
Okay.
What I get is a box.
All right.
Now, it's my box. I have to manage it. I have to manage the OS. I have to manage the SQL server. I have to manage the licensing. I have to manage everything. What I get is an actual box. I do not have to manage storage. I do not have to manage networking. I do not have to manage all what's behind that box. I get the box. That's the unit I get.
Yeah.
When we're talking about platform as a service, what we're talking about is an application. I give you an application. You host that application. You manage the box, the networking, the virtualization, everything. Mm-hmm. But you get from me an application to host. Okay. That's the goal.
Those are very good distinctions. I'm just not sure how I'm seeing how the nomenclature differentiates one from the other. You're absolutely correct about what each one does. I'm sort of talking about the names here.
The names infrastructure is a box. I get an infrastructure. I get a box. Platform as a service means I host an application, not I don't get a machine. I get hosting for a certain application, and that's my unit. And when I go to software as a service, the unit is business.
Well, the unit is business makes sense to me.
What I do is just business, okay? You give me an opportunity to do my business, to do my CRM, to do my mails, to do whatever, okay? You give me a business. Platform as a service, you host my application. Infrastructure as a service, you give me a box. And a software, a packaged software, you give me a disk.
Okay, fair point. I will tell you to be careful of the nomenclature in the middle, especially if you start looking at applications from other vendors who they don't really want me to talk about. Now, so I won't say Amazon's name, and I won't mention Google either. So if you look at their offerings, they are much more a la carte, and you will not uncommonly find yourself with a mixture kind of in the middle of these things. My point is, be a little bit careful of that nomenclature in the center. It has a way of jumping around. All right. Okay. So the Azure platform, well, this is Microsoft's offering the space. That's kind of nice. We've got Windows Azure. That is the compute environment, which we will see. We've got SQL Azure, which is relational storage. Mano will be talking about that in more detail tomorrow. We've got the App Fabric, which takes connects existing apps to the cloud and connects through network boundaries and nice stuff like this. I don't think we have anything on the App Fabric. Did we take that out?
We won't talk a lot about App Fabric. I would say that App Fabric is like an ESB for the cloud.
It's like an ESB for the cloud. Okay, we're not going to.
So it's like an ISB. Yeah,
like an ISB.
Internet Service Bus.
Okay.
A lot is happening in the Azure App Fabric today, and we're still waiting for things to be released. So this is why we won't talk about it now.
Okay.
Maybe we'll do that on the next session next year.
Okay.
When things will be released. It's a very interesting platform, but not to this scope.
You know, back when I was young and idealistic and stupid, I used to think that the next release of software was going to solve all my problems, right? And now that I'm old and cynical and stupid, if there's one thing I learned, it's that, you know, the next release might solve some of the problems I have today. It's going to give me an equal but opposite number of new problems. All right? The amount of crap in the universe is conserved. That's how I like to put it. That's Platt's second law. The amount of crap in the universe is conserved. You got less crap over here. You must have more crap over there because there's no such thing as making it go away. All right. So that's what we're going to do. And here are the kinds of cloud apps that I'm going to be talking about mostly today. You think about moving apps to the cloud. You want to get out of the data center business, or you want to agilicize your current large data center that you can't get rid of quite yet. When you start, you know, think back to when .NET came out, and all of a sudden web forms were there, and all of us, and everybody who knew how to program VB6 on the desktop, you know, had some notion as how to get a web application to totter to its feet. Okay. The tooling was there, and the tooling was pretty seamless. At the same time, about 75% of your skills were transferable, and there needed to be new ways of thinking about this new environment that you found yourself in, and the fact that it was somewhat familiar a lot of times obscured this notion, and Microsoft marketeers did not help here, obscured the notion that, hey, guess what, there are important differences, and you do need to understand what they are and how you need to think in different ways. These aren't necessarily hard ways to think, but you do need to know that they exist, and you need to start thinking now. And so we're going to be talking mostly now about apps that are designed for Windows Azure, that where you say, okay, here's the computing problem I want to solve. I'd like to do it in the cloud for logistical or economic reasons or what have you. And okay, how do I need to change my programming model? And the answer is you change it some, but not terribly much. And especially if you're already scaling out to 10 or 50 servers, the changes are going to be less than you might think. There are other ways of getting things into the cloud. There is here, you can make something compatible with Azure. There's this new thing called a virtual machine role, where you basically get a bare machine. Then you can install anything that you want. It's managed by the customer. It's very similar to what you get from Amazon.com, basically. If you want a raw, bare-bones machine, you can have that. That's a fairly new thing. We won't be talking about it very much. I've heard my customers tell me they find that very useful with SharePoint. Have you found that in the VM role?
You know, the value from VM role is that if you have a deployment session, which takes a long time, a long deployment session, you can do that deployment. You can prepare your machine at home. Maybe it would take you an hour or so.
Yeah.
And then you can take the whole lot, the whole package, and put it on the cloud. If you have just a short deployment session, which means, okay, you upload your application, but then you have to spin another Windows service or to write something to a registry, etc., or to register a COM, you can do so with a regular role. You don't need a VM role for that. With nowadays, with the high privilege role, web role or worker role, you can just do anything.
Okay.
So you can just prepare your environment exactly as it was on an on-prem machine.
All right. So if you need that control, now if there's one thing that, you know, I've been teaching this I've been teaching Windows going back to 1992 at Harvard University Extension School. I was teaching 16-bit Windows SDK and C. Dating myself here, aren't I?
Oh, a long time ago.
Yeah, indeed. And then went to the MFC, then, you know, did NT, did COM for 7 or 8 years, and then .NET. Don't get me started. Anyway, I found that, if there's one thing I found, that as long as Microsoft's had some really, and I mean really, really, really nice integration with tools. And if you want to say how does their cloud offering beat the other vendors, I would say it's the integration with the tools. And that is double-edged as always. You know, as long as you are doing exactly what Microsoft thinks you ought to be doing, in exactly the way Microsoft thinks you ought to be doing it, then zing, you are golden. You can cruise like you would not believe. Step out of line just one little bit and wham!
I'll tell you one thing. What I love about Windows Azure, that it helps me enjoy the cloud.
It helps you enjoy the cloud. You know,
it helps me leverage the cloud, because if I just take an infrastructure as a service as is, I get a machine. So I do exactly what I do on an on-prem machine.
There's a lot of scut work there, isn't there?
There is lots of work to do, but still I don't get the scaling out from the cloud. I don't get what the actual cloud gives me. I don't see the value of the cloud.
Yeah.
Now, when you work with a platform as a service, like an Azure platform, when you do Azure directs you to do the stuff you need to do to enjoy the cloud, to scale up, to enjoy the amazing computing power and the amazing storage that you get from the platform. And that's something nice.
Again, you know, they do a lot of the underlying, you know, I hate to say infrastructure, but that is infrastructure, isn't it? You know, the underlying infrastructure, and it's nice. It's a lot of the scut work, and the idea is that the things that are the same for all or most applications will be done more or less mostly for you by Microsoft, and to allow you to concentrate on your business logic. And by and large, that works fairly well. So, and then here's the other one, delivered as a service, and that is something that you may actually build to give to your customers. You may host your data services and whatever on Azure, and you will deliver software as a service to your customers. And they will just use your Salesforce automation or your medical automation or whatever. They will not know or care or need to know or need to care or want to need to know or want to need to care that you're running on Azure or something else. They just know that, hey, because remember, this is the goal. Your user doesn't care. They don't care how you built anything. They only care that it solves their problems, right? And that's what we're trying to get to. I mean, you care about how these things get implemented, but your user never does. So, anyway, all right. Now, so where are these things? Where do the data centers live? There's two of them in the U.S. There's North Central in Chicago, South Central. Is that one in San Antonio, do I recall? I think it's in San Antonio. There's a couple of them in Europe. There are a couple of them in Asia. You can specify when you go and spin this thing out to a host, you can specify where you want to need to put them. If you need them for legal reasons, perhaps, you can specify where your data center, where your data is going to live. That's kind of nice. Here are the countries that where it's currently available, and whoever did this web slide said, yeah, that will have a beautiful picture of a world here that's fabulous until you try to read the white text on top of the light blue picture. Fie on whoever did that. I'm a UI guy. What can I say? I'll use that as a case study in the next issue of Why Software Sucks.
I'm just happy.
Don't get me started. Anyway.
I'm just happy to see Israel here.
You're happy to see Israel's there. My friends in Iceland are unhappy that they don't see themselves there. There's Ireland right next to it, who is likewise getting their economy wiped out the way Iceland did not that long ago. You know the joke that they're telling there? The difference between Iceland and Ireland?
No.
Well, one letter and about 6 months. Anyway. So it's coming to a theater near you soon, and if not, bounce yourself off a proxy server in one of the countries that it does serve. Not a big problem to geeks like us. All right, so you can buy you can specify. The whole point of this is you can buy it in chunks, and here are some of the prices. A quick back of the envelope calculation there. Look on the left hand corner where it says compute per service hour. That's a small instance is 12 cents an hour, which if you figure it out is 12 times 24. I used to be able to do that. That's about $3 a day or so, 80 or 90 bucks a month. It runs you something like a grand a year, give or take. And
but you can make packages, and when you buy a certain amount of hours, it gets much cheaper.
There are packages, there are volume agreements, there are, if there are not now, there will soon be different levels of service, whereas a higher level of service will cost you more, whereas a lower level of service will cost you less. And again, think about the electric utility pricing models. There are many, and I mean, that was my first job in grad school, was working for the Electric Power Research Institute. There are enormous different levels of pricing and service that you can buy, you know, interruptible, uninterruptible, semi-interruptible, all kinds of things, all to maximize the return to the vendors of this non-storable, of this perishable resource. And the same thing applies here.
It's like the cell, you know, when you pay for your cell, you can buy different packages for different kind of customers. So that's the same here.
Same thing here. So there is probably somewhere a package that will more or less fit what you're trying to do. So that's the base price. Look around, see what they got. You'll probably find something good. But this isn't really about marketing, is it? So, like I said, you can buy, when we talk about the compute service, I will show you when we build the basic application, the compute service, you can buy bigger or smaller machines. You can buy a single CPU machine or a double CPU machine or a quad or an 8 CPU virtual machine with different amounts of memory and different amounts of storage. You know, it's there. Look around. Figure out the one that's right. When we start talking about storage, we'll talk more about what it costs then and how to figure out the right ones. When we talk about elasticity and scaling, I will talk about more, you know, when do you want a bigger instance and when do you want a smaller one and stuff like this.
You know, in the last PDC, they just announced an extra small machine.
An extra small.
Extra small machine.
Extra small.
And this is great for development. Like, I have just one single instance, and I want to put it in the cloud. I want to see if it just works. But I really don't want to pay for a machine. Uh-huh. So an extra small machine is even cheaper than what you can see here.
All right. So good for development. All right. Service level agreements. You know, this is marketing stuff. They sort of guarantee some connectivity and some amount of availability. But as we'll see when we get to the discussion on snags, there is some thought that has to happen here, and we will come back to that when we do. All right? Okay. So now, I was a physics major as an undergrad, and I always need to go back to the very basic principles, like force equals mass times acceleration. And then I went to grad school as an engineer, and the very first thing they tell you on the very first day of engineering school is to define the problem. So I'm going to talk about where the cloud works well and where the cloud does not work so well and the different kinds of problems that we're trying to solve. You've seen these diagrams before, but we're going to have some discussions on these more than we have previously. And again, if you have any questions, anything that you would like to ask about or contribute to it, you know, type it into your live meeting question box, and Manu here will be reading it and will be able to ask me those kinds of questions. So where does it work well? Well, here you've seen this on and off model. That's a classic one. Batch jobs. I have a client, a major pharmaceutical company whose name I'm not allowed to mention, and they have these very expensive scientists who come up with modeling software for a new drug. And they will do things like they will run these models that calculate the positions, the shapes of the molecules, what the receptor sites look like, things like this. And they're really expensive. They take an enormous, enormous amount of computation. They will run, they will put these jobs in, and the job will run for a week or so. The job will run for a week, sometimes 2 weeks. While this is happening, the scientists are twiddling their thumbs very expensively, number one. Also, the project, the drug project, they put enormous amounts of money, hundreds of millions of dollars in this. The day at which they will get a return on this keeps getting postponed. You know, just calculate the interest on this. Plus, the period during which they get a patent monopoly on the drug is getting shortened and shortened. So the cost of this time is absolutely enormous. Think of these downstream effects. And yet, you know, they have this on and off. If they had 1,000 servers, they run for a week, then they get turned off for 2 or 3 weeks, and then they get turned back on again. And during that time, they're paying to heat the room up, and they're paying to cool the room off, and, you know, it sucks down a lot of money by itself. So this on and off computing load is a really good one for the cloud. They can come and they can have 2,000 instances if that's what they need, while, you know, to crank it out sooner, and then turn them off and not pay for them for those 3 weeks until they get the next batch modeling job done.
I have a great example for that.
Yes, tell me.
I have a customer, and what they do, they compute salaries. They handle salaries.
Okay.
Now, salaries happens on the 1st of each month or on the 10th of each month.
Oh, there's a good thought.
So on the 10th of each month, there's a lot of computing to do.
Okay.
But for the rest of the month, there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't need a whole data center just for one day.
Okay.
That would be great here.
And it would. That's an excellent usage. Good. So those are the kinds of things, this sort of on and off pattern, that would be a pretty good fit for this kind of cloud infrastructure. I think that's a good thing for it. All right. What else could you see? Well, here's... I could argue that this is the greatest, that this is the most useful one, which is growing fast. You have a successful service. You've come up with an app. You know, you've written an app for the Windows phone, and it's taking off. All right? So you have to come up with more servers to serve the thing up, to take the customer's money when they pay it to you, to actually do the thing that they're paying you to do. And if you don't see, if you manage to sell these things, yes, this is the product I want, and they come and they buy it from you, and then you're too slow, they will get extremely angry and they will throw you away. All right? David Pogue of the New York Times saw this, and with characteristic modesty, he named it the Pogue effect after himself. The Line 2 iPhone app that lets you have a second line on your iPhone using voiceover IP, they ran into exactly this problem. He wrote about them in the New York Times, and everybody saw it. Everybody wanted one, said, hot diggity darn, and they went and they downloaded it, and they crashed Line 2's servers, and they, you know, at the very best cases, they wasted about the best free advertising you could get because they couldn't scale up. Right, and so when you're on this growth curve, you know, you need your capital. You go through, you know, all successful startups go through this bottleneck where, you know, if they're going to be successful, all of a sudden they've got some interest and they need to scale out and handle this. And at the same time, you need the infrastructure. Well, you know, you also need your capital for fixing bugs and extending it. You also need it for marketing, for going to all the shows, for giving them away in Cracker Jack boxes, things like this. And so you go through this bottleneck, and I think that the cloud right here, this may be its greatest contribution, is it can get these firms through this bottleneck that otherwise would not get through the bottleneck, that otherwise would get throttled by their lack of capital right here at the knee and the yeast growth, the knee of the yeast growth curve. So if you put a gun to my head and say which one's the most important, I would tell you it was this one, but that's just me being cranky.
I have an example here as well.
Oh, yeah.
I have a customer, and what they do polls.
Okay.
You know, they ask.
They
ask questions, and...
it's not that joke about the international polling that I told you when we were starting
No. And sometimes things get really, really relevant.
Okay.
And so these particular polls, they have lots of traffic. Now,
okay.
They cannot really... they cannot really know which one will have most of the traffic. Uh-huh. And then you can see a certain area of the site gets more and more and more and more and more traffic.
Okay, all okay? right.
So this growing fast will help those particular spots in the application to be able and to provide service.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's a good thought. And the this predictable bursting is kind of the one that the Azure evangelists talk about the most, I think. Just about everybody, if you think about it, has some sort of trend, some sort of seasonality trend. If you think about the on and off thing, that's actually a predictable burst with just a very high peak and a very low trough, that's all. Seasonality trends, the classic example is FTD florists. On Valentine's Day, they do half of their business selling roses on Valentine's Day. So they can be annual trends like that. They can be micro trends. If you think about it, most restaurants, well, they peak at lunchtime. They peak again at dinner time, and then they don't have a lot from midnight till 10 in the next morning. And so, golly gee whiz, is it possible to take advantage of those trends at all? And so the installed capacity is wasted when it's not being used, but the lack of sufficient capacity at a key moment can absolutely kill your business. And that's one of the first ones that they bring out.
I've got a great example here as well.
That one?
I have another customer. Okay. Wow, it's a real customer, you know.
Real customer, tell me about it.
And what they do is they do ticketing.
Ticketing, yes.
Yeah, and sometimes there's a great show.
I was going to say, would you call that predictable or unpredictable?
I would say that unpredictable.
Okay, because that's kind of my name in the next one, you know, I want to talk about.
Sometimes, when Elton John comes in, that's yes. predictable. Okay, mm-hmm. I know that there's going to be traffic there. But sometimes there's a match, there's a theater show, there's a movie, there's whatever, okay. And there's lots of traffic there. Mm-hmm. And they could not predict that.
Okay.
And the site falls, and their credibility falls.
Yes, absolutely.
And now their value is their credibility.
Very much so.
So with the unpredictable bursting, they can handle that.
Well, that's kind of the next thing that I wanted to talk about was unpredictable bursting, so let's just go there. That's what happens when you have an unexpected or an unplanned peak
exactly.
of demand, something that you never would have thought of was going to happen. Well, there are a bunch of them around, as you were saying, a demand for tickets at a show. Yeah. The group gets big being between the time you schedule it and the time you actually sell them. Weather.com, that's one. When a hurricane comes through in the U.S., then all of a sudden everybody starts checking weather.com to see where it is and so on.
Pizza on a Super Bowl night.
Pizza on a Super Bowl is highly predictable.
Yeah, it is right. predictable.
Okay, you got the slides mixed up here. Man.
Okay.
pizza on a Super Bowl night is highly predictable, but the hurricanes are unpredictable.
Of course.
Pretty good bet you're going to see some, but you don't know exactly when. And so to spin up more compute instances when you need that... And take them down when you don't, that's something that you need. Now, you know, weather.com probably, you know, they can't really afford to provision for the extreme case, but, you know, they've kind of got their name into people's consciousness. But if enough guys start coming there and saying, hey, let me check the weather, and they go to weather.com, it says, oops, sorry, server too busy. If that happens to them very much, well, that will kill the brand that they've so painfully built up. So that's unpredictable bursting. Now the one... thing that I'll the one caveat that I will give you here that I will say beware of this and we're going to take a break and when we come back and we're going to talk about this in more detail and that is the availability of resources when you want them. You know, suppose you are weather.com and you say, oh darn, you know, here I've got a big load, I need 100 more compute instances, and my question is, are you sure you're going to be able to get 100 compute instances then? And I'm not talking about half an hour to spin up, but how sure are you that you're going to be able to get 100 and not say, oops, sorry, we're really busy, you can only have 50 right now? And, you know, when you're doing this, you need to think very carefully about what your service level agreement is able to be and needs to be. So, you know, think that one through a little bit. So it's great for, and the analogy that I use here is finding a taxi in the rain in New York City. You know, I fly to New York City from Boston for the day, and then I want to get back to the airport to go home, but it starts raining, and all of a sudden everybody in New York starts taking taxis. That is an unpredictable cloudburst, I guess.
Yeah.
And I guess with that bad pun, it is time to, we've been going for our first chunk, it is time to take our first break, and we will be back in 10 minutes, and when that happens, here, you can look at our beautiful branding while we go get refreshed, and so do you.